U.S. Senator Susan Collins. Susan Collins has served Maine in the U.S. Senate since 1997. She is currently home in Maine for Senate recess. Wednesday, at a news conference to announce funding for Maine bridge repairs, Collins criticized President Trump's plan to divert money from FEMA for the construction of a border wall. Yesterday, she held a Senate field hearing on Lyme disease. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Senator Collins has not yet made an official announcement about whether she will seek re-election, but her race is already the subject of intense speculation and fundraising, as many Democrats see Collins as vulnerable in the 2020 election. We'll ask her about her future, judicial appointments, Planned Parenthood, dark money, and more. What are your questions for Senator Susan Collins? Maine Calling is next. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. I am here with Maine Public senior political reporter Mal Leary and U.S. Senator Susan Collins. We have already received many, many emails, tweets, and Facebook posts, and we're going to try to get to as many of your questions as possible. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, and if you send an email, please make it brief, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Senator Collins and Mal, thank you both for being here today on this lovely Friday in Maine.
It's a pleasure to join you, Jennifer, and Mal also.
So, Senator Collins, I'm going to ask you the first question. You have raised money for re-election. You've made public comments that suggest you are planning to run again, but you have not made an official announcement. Are you interested in making news today on Maine Calling and letting us know whether or not you are going to officially announce your bid for re-election?
Well, that certainly is tempting in many ways, given that it's Maine Public. But the fact is, I'm going to stick to the timetable that I set out early this year of making a final decision this fall and announcing it then. I am laying the groundwork and certainly would run an aggressive campaign should I decide to run. And I expect I'll keep to my timetable and unfortunately deprive you of a scoop today.
Oh my. But what is your timetable? Are you talking about October, November?
It'll be this fall, most likely October. That I'll make. So it's not far. You know, I think campaigns go too long and that they cost too much and that people are not really clamoring to know. It used to be that in the off year, those were relatively non-political years, and we would work together in a bipartisan way and with the administration and pass legislation. Now it seems like we're in a constant 24/7 campaign cycle, and I think a lot of people find that rather tiresome. So I think announcing more than a year ahead what my decision will be is plenty of time.
Mal.
Senator, the Trump presidency has been chaotic for the people of the United States, let alone the people here in Maine. You're either for Trump or against Trump, the way he looks at it. And he uses tweets to attack people on a constant basis. What's it been like to be in the Senate with the president coming down on both sides of an issue and you not know where your leader, your party leader is going?
Well, I've always taken an independent approach to the issues, regardless of who the president is. But I will certainly say that it is far more difficult nowadays to be a centrist than it used to be. For one thing, the number of senators who are in the middle and don't toe a party line is shrinking. And I think that's unfortunate for our nation. I support the president when I think he's right. I oppose him when I think he's wrong. The far right thinks that I don't support him enough. The far left thinks I support him too much. All I can do is what I think is right for Maine and for the nation. I will agree with you. It has been a chaotic time to be serving in Washington. But I'm proud that this year, for the sixth year in a row, I was once again rated the most bipartisan member of the Senate. I'm proud of that because I think the way to get things done is to work across party lines.
Senator Collins, you wrote in 2016 in an op-ed that President Trump or then candidate Trump was unworthy to be president at the time. Do you still agree with that?
Donald Trump was not my candidate, and indeed I supported three other candidates. Jeb Bush was my favorite candidate. He obviously did not last as long as I would have liked. And I was concerned and about several of the way that the president had treated people during the campaign. And I did write an op-ed explaining that I could not support him as the Republican candidate. Nevertheless, despite my views, he was elected as the Republican candidate, and he went on to be elected as president. And unlike some people in this country, I accept the fact that he is president of the United States. As a senator, my role is to work with the president. Doesn't mean that I agree with him on many issues, but I do agree with him on some issues, such as that the American people are overtaxed. That's a major difference between me and my likely Democratic opponents, should I run.
All right, Mel.
If you see any changes in his conduct or how he runs his presidency that gives you hope that he would be a better president, or are you still in that mindset that, well, he won, so I have to support him?
I think the president has learned in office, as all presidents do. I still would prefer that he had a different style. I would prefer that he never sent another tweet out again. And it troubles me when he denigrates the service of people who have been in his cabinet, for example. I don't think that is the best way to operate. If you feel a service cabinet member is not serving you well, I believe a president should call them quietly into his office and say, I want you to resign. And the president's entitled to have the cabinet that he wants, and, you know, within boundaries. And I don't think that style is effective. On the other hand, he has been successful in getting some of our NATO partners to ante up the amount of money that they contribute to NATO. I don't like the tit-for-tat tariffs with China, which have been so detrimental to our lobster industry and to some of our manufacturers in this state. But he's right that China cheats, steals our intellectual property, and does not play by the rules of the WTO, the World Trade Organization. So his style is so different from my own. I have noticed on those occasions when I've been in a meeting with the president that he will listen to what each person says. Now, it doesn't mean he'll accept what you say or agree with you, but he does listen. He is not my chief contact at the White House. I know there's some who call him up regularly. I deal with a host of other people at the White House.
Well, you know, you just criticized on Wednesday. Well, here in Maine, the decision or the plan by the president to divert money that's intended for FEMA to a border wall, that's just part of the money. Other money is being taken from the Department of Defense. Do you believe any of that diverted money is okay, or do you oppose diversion of any funds meant for something else to the border wall?
There are some laws which give the president the authority to reprogram funds. And there is also a process by which the president can come back to the Appropriations Committee, on which I serve, and ask for a reprogramming of funds. What I oppose, and I led the fight in the Senate with Senator Tom Udall, Democrat of New Mexico, on this issue, is the president diverting money that his administration originally requested for military construction projects that are urgently needed, that Congress approved and that he signed into law, and having him divert that for building a wall or any other purpose without coming back to Congress. I authored the legislation to overturn the president's executive order, and we got it passed by the Senate with Republican support. Unfortunately, the president vetoed our bill, and it was sustained last year by the House. So that was not successful. But I want to make very clear that from my perspective, this is a matter of Constitution. Article 1, Section 9 makes very clear that Congress controls the purse strings. And the president, in my judgment, is not acting according to the separation of powers laid out by our founders when he diverts billions of dollars that were appropriated for one purpose for another. I do think we need to increase border security, but this is not the way to get the money.
So when you say this is constitutionally incorrect, this is wrong, what can the U.S. Senate do? Or does this need to be challenged in the courts?
Well, it's going to be challenged in the court. Senate has been challenged in the courts. And I expect that you'll see that that will continue to work up the cases through the courts. But we did take action. We introduced Senator Udall of New Mexico and I introduced the bill to overturn. We got 12 Republican senators who voted with us because they too felt it was important to safeguard the Senate's prerogatives in this area. I regret that the president's veto was sustained and thus his executive order remains in place. Now the only alternative is a court challenge, and those are underway. I do want to go back to a point I made. There are areas where the president is allowed to shift around funding, but the military construction area is not one. You could argue that under FEMA that this is an emergency on the border, but it seems to me when we're in the midst of a hurricane and in the beginning of hurricane season that you don't want to be raiding the funds for assistance in for natural disasters.
And you say you would like increased border security. Is the wall the answer, or would you like to see other measures?
I would like to see a comprehensive approach to border security. In some cases, a physical barrier like a wall does make sense. I've been to the southern border in the Obama administration when there was an influx of unaccompanied minors coming into the country, and I saw areas where the Border Patrol agents told us they needed a wall. And then I saw areas where a wall would be totally impractical and you need technology such as sensors, or you need to build a road to a remote area, or you need more Border Patrol agents. So I think you need an all-of-the-above approach, but I do think it's a problem when we have record numbers of people making this very dangerous journey to the United States, some of whom have legitimate asylum claims and should be coming through ports, legal ports of entry, and citing those claims, and others who are drug traffickers or are just trying to smuggle their way in. One area that hasn't gotten the attention I think it needs is for us to provide some assistance to what are called the triangle countries in Central America to help provide a way to help to assist those governments in dealing with the gang violence and the extensive poverty. We had a successful effort with Colombia called Plan Colombia that took many years but did greatly reduce the smuggling of cocaine into this country by having other crops that could be planted by farmers, for example. And I think that if we helped those Central American countries, that we would see an improvement at the southern border. I also want to point out that that isn't the whole immigration story. We need comprehensive immigration reform. And I put together a package with working with a bipartisan group of more than 20 senators last year that had $2.5 billion for border security for each year for 10 years. And it also had a path towards citizenship for those DACA groups. Those are the young people who are brought to this country through no decision of their own by their parents. They've often known no other country at all. I'm very sympathetic to them. They've grown up here, and I think they have clean records. There should be a path to citizenship for that group.
Mel.
Go back to politics here for a moment. Even though you haven't announced, there are what we call dark money groups already spending a lot of money to try to defeat you, even though you haven't announced. There's no doubt in my mind there will be other groups supporting you if you decide to seek re-election. Yet you have not voted for all of the campaign disclosure bills that have been up in the Senate. What's the kind of bill that you would support to make sure people know where this money's coming from?
Well, people should know where this money is coming from, and I do support disclosure. What I don't support was a bill that came over from the House that exempted certain groups from having to do disclosure. I think that this should be across the board. And it's very interesting. I've never had so much money spent against me in negative ads so early. It's approximately $1.5 million in false attack ads on television, on the internet. It's just been nonstop. And we don't know who's paying for those. We have our suspicions, but you notice when there are also these new groups like Main Momentum. When the former Democratic aides to various people who are running those groups are asked, who's paying your salary? They've refused to say. And I think the people from Maine have a right to know. And I feel that way regardless of who these groups are. I think that you should, just as I have to disclose all of my contributions and file reports with the FEC, I think they should have to disclose where the source of their money is coming from, regardless whether they're for me or against me.
So will
but
you
they've
ask,
all been against me
so far. But let's say we have some groups come in that support you. Will you ask them to disclose where their money is coming from, the same as the other groups?
I think we should have a level playing field, and I would support a bill that required all groups to disclose their donors. It seems to me that there should not be an ideological test on whether you're on the left or the right or the center. It seems to me that, you know, there's there are all these groups like Main Momentum and Doctor Patient Unity. Who are they? Where's their money coming from? They clearly have a lot of it. They've got paid staff. They've bought $1.5 million of television, radio, internet ads, done mailings.
We're speaking with U.S. Senator Susan Collins on Maine Calling. Jennifer Rooks here with Mal Leary. We'll get to listener calls and questions in just a minute. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Forestry Foundation, celebrating 75 years of conserving forests for future generations. Learn more at newenglandforestry.org. And Folia in Portland's Old Port, where you'll find jewelry by Maine designers, as well as custom design and repair services. FoliaJewelry.com.
The days are getting shorter, and the field is getting smaller.
Biden has been there at the top, and it's the turmoil has been going on underneath him. Does that break the surface or not?
We discuss what to expect from the next phase of Campaign 2020. That's next time on The Takeaways Politics with Amy Walter from WNYC and PRI.
That's coming up this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. You've heard the tones before here on Maine Public Radio and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant, and Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, along with Maine Public senior political correspondent Mal Leary. Today on the program, Maine's senior senator, Susan Collins. She was first elected to the U.S. Senate in 1996. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with a voicemail that came in before the program began. This is from Kurt in Belfast.
Hello, my name is Kurt, calling from Belfast. My question for Senator Collins is why she's planning on supporting Mitch McConnell for Senate Majority Leader when he consistently blocks bills that Mainers support, such as improving election security. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I am going to support Mitch McConnell as leader, and I don't expect that he's going to be challenged to be leader should I run again and be reelected. The House and the Senate are two different bodies, and they're controlled by different political parties. The only bills that have to originate in the House under the Constitution are tax bills and the appropriations bills. So I don't understand this feeling that any bill that is passed by the House, no matter whether it's narrowly passed or overwhelmingly passed, should automatically be on the Senate agenda, where we produce our own legislation, and a lot of times the House doesn't take it up as well. With regard to election security, I agree with you that this is important, and I have co-sponsored an election security bill in the last Congress that was introduced by a bipartisan bill by James Lankford and Amy Klobuchar. And I do think we need to, at this stage, provide more help to state governments to make sure they're electoral systems are secure. I'm a member of the Intelligence Committee, and we put out the first chapter of our report into Russia's attempt to interfere with the election and also shape public opinion. And there's no doubt in my mind, and this was a conclusion of our report, that the Russians probed the electoral systems of every single state. not just the three that have become public, but every single state. So we have to help states harden their systems. We have appropriated hundreds of millions of dollars for them to use to do that. If additional funding is needed, I will certainly support that as well. But I do agree that election security is extremely important. The Russians essentially are trying to undermine the foundations of our democracy. And other countries, it's not just the Russians, the Iranians and the Chinese are also doing cyber probing and attacks as well.
Do you think that the majority leader has too much power? In that, as you said, he decides what comes up for a vote. And you disagree with him on this bill, and I know you disagree with him on some others. Should there be a process that allows bills to come to the floor, even if the majority leader says, no, I don't want to take it up?
Well, I think we should have a more open process the way we used to in the Senate, where, for example, if a bill were on the Senate floor, we often had an open amendment process rather than the way the House always has strict rules for what amendments are allowed to come up, and it goes through the Rules Committee. I much prefer the way that we used to legislate in the Senate, where a bill would come on the floor and there would often be negotiations to try to have a certain number of amendments on both sides of the aisle. But it was far more open a process, and I certainly prefer that. I have no problem with and frequently talk to the majority leader about bringing up bills that are priorities for me. And as you know, September, first things first, the end of the fiscal year is September 30th, and we've got to get the appropriations bills passed to prevent a government shutdown, which I think represents the ultimate failure to govern.
An email from Sarah, and this is related to many emails that came into Maine Calling before the program began. Senator Collins, you voted in support of judicial appointments at all levels of the federal judiciary. In cases where the American Bar Association has expressed doubts about the judge's qualifications, could you explain why you choose not to heed the concerns of a nonpartisan organization that is highly respected on this topic?
Well, I do always consider the ABA rating as part of my review of judicial nominations. Look, I follow the Constitution, and the Constitution gives the president the power to nominate people to the judiciary. It is my job as a senator to decide whether or not to confirm that individual, but with my vote, but I don't get to pick who the nominees are. And I have always looked at the qualifications of the appointee, the experience, the integrity of the individual, and evaluated whether or not they were in the judicial mainstream. But I do not consider the personal views of the nominee, but rather whether he or she can put those views aside. And it's interesting because I have voted to confirm the same percentage of nominees from President Trump as I have from President Obama, from Democratic presidents. So I have rejected some of the president's nominees. For example, there was a nominee from Utah called named Howard Nielsen, who I felt demonstrated a prejudice against LGBT individuals. He actually filed a motion to try to get a federal judge who was gay and in a same-sex relationship disqualified from hearing a case. I thought that that was wrong, and I voted against him. I voted against Wendy Vitter, even though she's the wife of a former colleague of mine from Louisiana, because she had advanced discredited assertion, bizarre assertions about there being a link between contraception and abortion and cancer. And I felt that she would be unable to put aside her personal views, which is what I want a judge to be able to do, and rule fairly. I voted against a judge named Chad Riedler for the Sixth Circuit. He was the policy advisor in the Justice Department that advised that the Justice Department should not defend the pre-existing conditions provisions of the Affordable Care Act. So those are just three examples. There are others where I made my opposition known, and the nominees were withdrawn and never came to a vote.
All right, Mel.
But it's going to be troubling when the American Bar Association, which is nonpartisan, non-political group that's reviewing the qualifications of these judges, come back and say, this person isn't qualified to be a judge. I mean, a lot of times they say they're qualified, and then the next status is highly qualified. But the president seems to have nominated a lot of people that are coming up with the total unqualified provision from ABA.
I would beg to differ with you on that. For example, there was one nominee that I do believe, Brett Talley was his name, that did get an unqualified by a majority of the ABA group. And I was concerned he'd never tried a case, for example, and he was withdrawn when several of us raised that concern. I would note that the president's two nominees for the Supreme Court received unanimously well-qualified ratings from the ABA, which I suspect many of your listeners would be disappointed to hear that and would not want me to go by the ABA rating in that case. So it's the ABA rating is important, and I always give it weight. It is not the only one. If there were a unanimously not qualified, that would give me great pause.
We'll go to an email from Jill. Recent studies show that more than half of rural residents favor stricter laws on assault-style weapons. Given that most of Maine is rural, do you support stricter gun safety laws? What bills do you support or will bring to the Senate floor in support of gun safety?
This is a very important issue, and I think all of us are extremely upset about the epidemic of mass shootings that we've seen in this country. And I believe that we do need to have a package of gun safety legislation brought to the floor. I'd like to see it brought to the floor along with the appropriations bills this month. And I have conveyed that to Senator McConnell. In the past few weeks, I've been working very hard with senators on both sides of the aisle, with Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, Senator Pat Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, as well as White House officials, to try to shape a package of gun safety bills that I believe could pass the Senate. Part of that would be strengthening the background checks. Right now, if you sell a gun online to someone that you don't know, you don't have to go through the background check system. I think that's a major problem. And I think commercial sales, with the exception of sales to family members, should require a background check. So I think that that's a way that we could strengthen the background check system, which is intended to keep firearms out of the hands of criminals and those with serious mental illness. Second, I am looking at how we could do what's known as a protective order when there is an emergency restraint that is needed. Maine passed a version of this in the legislature, and I've been taking a look at the law that Maine passed and to see whether that might be a model at the federal level. This has to have robust due process provisions, which Maine's law does. But what it does, essentially, is it's intended to, such as, you know, the person in Dayton, where there were so many signs that he was a danger to himself and others. It's intended to set up a process where there could be a review by a medical professional and a court, and that person could lose access to weapons. And I think that is a good proposal, and I'm looking very closely at Maine's law. And third is a bill that Democratic Senator Pat Leahy and I have authored, and it's aimed at straw purchasers. You may remember that there were some gang members from Connecticut that came to Maine. They could never have passed a background check because they had criminal records, but they found people who did not have criminal records to go buy the guns for them. And sadly, in many cases, these were people who were addicted to heroin. And what they did was a swap. I remember the DEA briefing me about this, of heroin for guns. And so that's a straw purchaser when you're using someone else. Right now, that's often treated as a paperwork offense, and the penalties are not tough. So Democratic Senator Pat Leahy and I have joined together before the recess and introduced again this Congress our straw purchasing bill. It's been endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police, by the Chief of Police for major cities, and by other law enforcement organizations. And I think that that would make a difference. I think that's a package that could pass. And I would like to see us do it.
We have to take another quick break. When we come back, more questions from our audience for U.S. Senator Susan Collins. Stay with us.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Farmland Trust, inviting you to Growing Together, a 20th anniversary celebration, October 3rd at Broad Turn Farm in Scarborough. More at mainefarmlandtrust.org. And New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
A dialogue project brings together people from Massachusetts, South Carolina, and Kentucky to talk about race and racism.
I would say that race is probably the most difficult conversation to have in our country.
We'll learn how the conversation's going between these very different parts of our country on Next from the New England News Collaborative. We'll also go looking for the oldest trees.
I think most of the places that are old forest, we may not even know about.
Please join us.
And that's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. High School Quiz Show Maine brings high school students together to compete in the areas of science, history, math, current events, and popular culture. Season 4 is coming up, and we're now looking for high school teams from all around Maine to take the qualifying test later this fall, which then results in the top 16 teams taking part in the on-air competition on Maine Public Television. How to sign up your high school, as well as how to form a team, the rules, the schedule, and video of last year's contests are all at mainepublic.org. Hope your school can join the fun. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Senator Susan Collins is here with me, as well as Maine Public's senior political correspondent, Mal Leary. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. I have to be honest, though, we have so many calls and emails coming in. I doubt we'll be getting to any new ones who come in. We're going to start with Diane in Portland. Hi, Diane. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. It's Diane Russell. Hope you and AJ are well. I need a little context. So last fall, a lot of folks were really outraged about what was happening around Brett Kavanaugh. And I heard from a lot of Maine women who had been victims of sexual assault, rape, sexual molestation, and they wanted to go to D.C. So for the record, I did not take a dime for my time. I organized a couple of bus trips down, and we had about 30 or 40 women that came down, a couple of men too, because they wanted to meet with their senator to look them in the eye. When I was down there, there were about 30 elected
officials. Diane, we're short on time. Can you ask the question?
I'm getting to the point. I promise I'll get to the point. Of all those people, you did not meet with the elected officials. You refused to. And you only met with five of the people. I'd like to know why you chose not to meet with all these people when you found time to meet with Mitch McConnell for lunch.
Diane, you know full well that I met with many, many groups of sexual survivors, including some of the people that you personally brought down to Washington. So I met with many. I talked on the phone with many, and I heard their stories, and their stories are very painful. The number of women who have been traumatized by sexual abuse in this country is appalling.
Diane, thanks for calling in. We have an email from Francine. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin just said he would come to Maine and campaign for Collins. Would she accept his help?
I certainly would. Joe and I are good friends. We've worked together on a host of issues. We both represent states that are predominantly rural, and I'm very proud to have his endorsement.
Diane Russell kind of went around the issue, but the whole question of your support, your vote for Brett Kavanaugh, has cost you some political capital. How do you try to get that back from folks who believe that your vote somehow shut them out of the process?
Well, I don't understand the shut out of the process part, because I met with literally hundreds of constituents on that and on that issue. Look, here is my answer. I know that there are people who vehemently disagree with my decision to support Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation. That was a vote of integrity. It would have been a lot easier for me to cast a politically expedient vote and oppose him, but that would not have been the right thing to do. And I have always voted with integrity. I do what I think is right. I spent more time interviewing Judge Kavanaugh one-on-one, insisting that Christine Blasey Ford, who clearly was traumatized in her life and had her life upended, insisting that the FBI reopen its background investigation to interview the people whom she says were present the night of the alleged assault. And I personally read every one of those FBI reports, and what I found was not corroboration, but rather contradiction. I believe something terrible happened to Christine Blasey Ford, but there is not evidence to support the premise that Brett Kavanaugh was her assailant. He did have a unanimous, well-qualified ABA rating. He served 12 years on the circuit court. I went through his major decisions. I read his speeches, his law review articles. I interviewed him at one point for 2 hours and 15 minutes, at another point for an hour. I spent more time interviewing him than any other senator. I talked to people who had worked with him, and he had led an exemplary life. The ABA, by the way, interviewed 500 people as part of its review, and no one had a negative word to say about him. He'd been through 8 background checks because of previous jobs that he had had, and the people who knew him best in his life all vouched for him from all time in his life, from when he was a high school student through to his judgeship on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And my concern is I felt that the nomination process had disintegrated into a dysfunctional circus. We had one far-left group put out a press release before he was nominated that urged everyone to oppose Judge XXX. They forgot to put in his name. One of my colleagues announced his opposition before they even knew who the nominee was. I don't think that's what the Constitution expects the Senate to do. I think it should be a solemn, serious, and thorough investigation of the nominee's qualifications. That's what I did. And if we start abandoning fundamental principles of due process, fairness, the presumption of innocence in this country, we won't be the same country.
We have an email from Sam. Senator Collins, where do you see the future of the Republican Party going? Do you think President Trump encapsulates the values your party has as a whole?
That's a very thoughtful question. In my time in Washington, I have seen both parties swing back and forth. There was a time when the Democratic Party, and we seem to be entering that time right, well, we are in that time right now, that it is largely being driven by outside groups on the far left. And I think outside groups on the far right have a disproportionate role now in the Republican Party as well. My hope is that both parties can get back to the middle. I think the middle is where most Americans are, but I'll tell you, the emergence of these outside groups on the far left and the far right has in many ways contributed to the poisoning of the political discourse. Because if you are not with those groups 100% of the time on 100% of their views, they will make you pay a price. They will run a primary opponent against you, which they have every right to do. I'm not saying that. I'm just talking about what the impact is on our ability to work together. We have got to stop viewing someone who disagrees with you on an issue as your enemy, rather than as someone who has a different perspective. And I hope that both parties can get back to that center, which is where I am and where I believe that most Americans are. I think the center needs to speak up more and not cede the political ground to groups on the far left and the far right.
We just have a few seconds left, Mal. A follow-up question for Senator Collins.
It's interesting the way you phrase this. Back to the middle, back to the center. Most Mainers are in the center, as you well know from polling. Yet you've had a downturn in your numbers, in the public polling anyway. Why do you think folks are looking at you differently now than they did the last election or several past elections?
Well, first of all, I heard that in 2002, 2008, 2014 as well, that when I was targeted, particularly in 2008. And I think that the moderates still recognize that I'm the most bipartisan senator and that I vote with integrity and I work hard for the state of Maine.
Senator Collins, thank you so much for joining us today. Susan Collins, first elected to the U.S. Senate in 1996. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. We had additional help from Nick Woodward, Jeff Mahaney, and Rich Tozier. Special thanks to Steve Missler. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. For me and Mal Leary, thank you. Have a great weekend.